morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us today. Coming up a little bit later this hour, problems at the U.S. Postal Service, their ongoing delays in delivery. We'll get the latest on the challenges that the post office is facing during what is probably an unprecedented year for deliveries, given the pandemic and people's changing gift delivery habits as a result of that. But we begin, speaking of the pandemic, with Congress's efforts to come up with a compromise relief bill. As you know, for weeks now, there's been an impasse and very different things that Democrats and Republicans have wanted in that bill. With us to talk about where things stand is Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. Anna, so good to have you with us again today.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So they went late into the night trying to negotiate a compromise deal. Where do we stand today?
Yes, it was a very late night on the Hill, and they're still at it today. They haven't quite finalized the last few things. It looks like the liability protections for companies from COVID-related lawsuits that Republicans wanted is not going to be in the final version. It also looks like the $160 billion for state and local governments that Democrats wanted is not going to be in the final version, although Democrats are pushing for different kinds of funding to go through different avenues to get to states, like maybe an extra $100 billion for schools and universities, as well as more funds for vaccine distribution.
And is this kind of an explicit quid pro quo, like Republicans, okay, we'll forego the liability protection for businesses related to COVID if you forego the aid to, you know, states, counties, and cities?
What it really came down to is kind of a hard deadline here at the end of the year and just an agreement to go forward with what they all agree on and leave what they can't agree on until next year. So I do expect them to come back early in the Biden administration to try again on the liability protections and the additional aid for local governments, but they just couldn't get it done in time to attach it to the spending bill that they need to finalize by Friday.
What kind of benefit will Americans be looking like, looking at if this draft is the one that's passed?
So the main thing to keep an eye out for is the direct stimulus payments to individuals. And that's not going to come in at the $1,200 amount that was in the CARES Act that was passed in March. It looks like it's going to be $600 per individual, with $600 for children as well. So, you know, for a family of four, that adds up to $2,400. There will also be $300 per week supplemental unemployment insurance. So for someone who's lost their job recently, you know, getting those individual stimulus payments in addition to the supplemental unemployment insurance adds up to a hefty chunk to help kind of bridge some financial gaps for people who need it.
So that would be what, about half of the enhanced unemployment benefit as there's been?
It depends on the state. You know, states have different levels of unemployment benefits. So this $300 per week would come in on top of whatever states already provide.
But I meant the enhancement. I think it was $600 from the feds. So this would be $300 a month as the unemployment enhancement from the federal government.
$300 per week.
Per week, excuse me. Yeah. All right. Very good. Also joining us, Jacqueline Alemany, politics reporter and anchor of the Power Up newsletter for The Washington Post. Jacqueline, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Anything to add about the negotiations and possible timeline for a deal being reached?
Look, it's, you know, we've come to this point, I think, several times before over the past few months, as obviously a relief deal that's been much needed has eluded Congress really since the summer. But this does feel a little bit different. I think there is a recognition setting in that there is a benefits and eviction cliff that Americans are facing, millions of them. The poverty rate has increased, you know, more during this year than any other time since the federal government has been keeping track of the poverty rate. So I think that with the time crunch, the constraints, and really the precarious situation that the American public is in right now, a deal seems likelier than we have seen before. That being said, you know, once it's always unclear with this Republican-controlled Senate and whether or not they actually will pass a new spending deal with, you know, so many fiscal hawks who have been really against consistently passing anything and giving anyone any new money.
Well, and haven't the Democrats in the House also been very reluctant to have anything passed that didn't include governmental aid to the states?
That's exactly right. There have been some consistent red lines on the Democratic side. They have been consistently against the liability provision, and Republicans have insisted that they would not accept state and local aid, which Democrats have insisted on without the liability provision. So that has been a point of contention, but it does seem like this situation and the bill that's been hashed out right now resolves that.
We're talking with Jacqueline Alemany, politics reporter for The Washington Post, Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. If you have questions about what's going on in D.C. right now with those negotiations, with what's happening with President-elect Biden's construction of his cabinet, we have a few more individuals in the past 24 hours who've been named as nominees to his cabinet. We're at 866-893-KPECC. You can ask a question via Twitter at AirTalk, post on the AirTalk Facebook page, or post on our AirTalk page at kpecc.org. Anna Edgerton, just talk a little bit more about the liability protection. This would have been a kind of blanket immunity for businesses, for lawsuits against claims that COVID exposure on the job had caused financial damages to employees. Is that what this would have done?
Yeah, there's a few different ways to look at this. You know, if you listen to Republicans, they'll say this is something that small businesses need in order to open up safely, in order to not have the kind of legal risk that they could just have any employee say that they got COVID while they were at work, even if that wasn't able to be proved. But when you listen to Democrats, they say that if you put too broad of protections for companies from lawsuits related to the coronavirus, then you could protect companies like big meat packers that demonstrably didn't take enough safety precautions, especially early on in the coronavirus pandemic. And that could protect these huge companies from having to do even the minimum amount of kind of protections for their employees. So, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. I think if there's going to be a compromise on that, it's going to come next year. It was just too tough a nut to crack with this end of the year deadline.
Anna Edgerton of Bloomberg, where she's politics editor. Jacqueline Alemany of The Washington Post, where she's anchor of the Power Up newsletter and politics reporter. Again, we're at 866-893-KPECC. President-elect Biden nominated former rival in the presidential primary, Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, as his Secretary of Transportation. The choice was not Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, as had been speculated. There have been ongoing protests at Garcetti's house attempting to convince the Biden administration not to tap Garcetti for the transportation secretary job. Also, word that Gina McCarthy, former EPA chief, is being looked at to direct the ambitious climate plan for the federal government that Joe Biden is laying out, and Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm as energy secretary. She's been a major advocate of alternative energy. Jacqueline, let's talk a little bit about these choices that the president-elect has made. Is there a theme here?
Yeah, I think the theme here that, you know, isn't thrilling some more progressive Democrats is that Biden is recycling old names, former Obama administration top officials and advisors into the new administration. There has already been you're starting to see some pushback from the progressive left, the AOCs of the world, people who I think thought that Biden would reach a little deeper, be a little bit more creative when it came to appointing people and making these decisions. There's also been pushback as Biden has quietly added people to the administration and the transition team who have worked for Goldman Sachs, McKinsey consulting firm, BCG alums, people who I think sort of represent the revolving door that Democrats have thought that they have sort of gotten rid of. But I think, you know, the guiding mantra of the Biden administration's cabinet picks have been being boring while making history. His cabinet has been a cabinet of firsts. He's made a number of historic nominations that I don't think we can overlook. For example, Pete Buttigieg will be the first LGBTQ cabinet member. There are a number of other, you know, historic moments that Biden has made throughout his picks. For example, Lloyd Austin will be the first African-American defense secretary if he is confirmed. So it's I think there are, you know, pros and cons here that Democrats need to weigh as there is pushback. And regardless, Democrats are going to face and Joe Biden will face a tough nomination period if the Senate remains controlled by Republicans.
And I know you meant this, Jacqueline, but we just want to mention that Pete Buttigieg is the only openly gay member of, if he's confirmed, of a cabinet. There have undoubtedly been gay and lesbian members of the cabinet, but that has not been open about that, their identity. Let's see, Jennifer in Redondo Beach. Jennifer, your question quickly, please.
Yes, so I'm noticing that when the media or government officials are talking about the unemployment, they're leaving some of the information out. For example, state unemployment, it's a spectrum. Not everybody receives and is eligible for the same thing. Myself, for example, I live in Los Angeles, and I'm only eligible for $150 per week for my state unemployment. And right now I have no federal stimulus of any kind, right? So that's $600 a month that I'm a single mom trying to raise my child on during these times. Any federal stimulus, the $300, if that is approved, it would equal then a total of $450 a week. I think I'm just a little confused why the federal government, I mean, I'm confused about a lot of things that they
do. Yeah, as all of us are, Jennifer, but let me just clarify. Are you self-employed or were you self-employed?
No, I actually just moved back to the United States. I'm an American. I grew up in New York, but I just moved to Los Angeles to start a position in March. And then the day before I was said to start, it was canceled due to COVID. So because I was living overseas, I'm not.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So it sounds like because of that, unfortunately, you're in this position not getting benefits. Anna Edgerton, you have any thoughts about the position Jennifer is in?
Yeah, that's such a tough story. And Jennifer, definitely wishing the best for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hear stories like that from all across the country. And, you know, in some states, people have had a lot of access, a lot of trouble accessing any unemployment benefits because these systems can be kind of clunky and they're just not designed for the millions of people who've been trying to access them. We've seen especially trouble from people in Florida who have lost their jobs and can't get through to anyone to get any kind of support from either the state or federal government. So, you know, that's an excellent point and something to keep in mind that while these are being passed at the federal level, the mechanism is not necessarily in place to get this help to people who need it. And that's a challenge that state governments have to overcome and don't necessarily have the resources to do that quickly.
Anna, thank you so much. We know you got to run. Really appreciate your being with us again on Air Talk.
Anytime. My pleasure.
Thank you, Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. And Jennifer, we do wish you the best. Jacqueline Alemany, politics reporter for The Washington Post. I wanted to ask you about this big hack that's occurred in a number of different governmental departments and agencies. What do we understand about the Russian government's involvement and the kind of information which might have been obtained?
Yeah, this story is a fascinating one, and we keep revealing more and more new information that is showing that it's a broader espionage campaign that has compromised many U.S. agencies more than previously thought, going back months, according to reporting done by our colleagues Ellen Nakashima and Craig Timberg. You know, officials were scrambling over the weekend to try and identify the full extent of the intrusions by Russia. But what we do know right now is that the hackers are part of Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service, the SVR, and they have breached email systems and been able to potentially access sensitive information. So again, this really was the impetus for this story was because there were a number of cyber firms, prominent ones like FireEye, that were hacked over the weekend. And now it's, again, becoming clearer that this is a broader campaign from Russia.
All right. Thank you very much, Jacqueline. We appreciate your being with us and talking about all these important political and governmental issues going on right now in D.C. That's Jacqueline Alemany joining us from The Washington Post. She's anchor of the Power Up newsletter and politics reporter for The Post. Coming up on Air Talk later this hour, we're going to listen to a couple of excerpts from a classic rant said to be from Tom Cruise. Various publications are saying sources are saying, yeah, it's him. Cruise on the set of the Mission Impossible sequel that he's working on, and he totally goes off on a couple of members of the crew for not following COVID-19 protocol. I want to hear from you whether you've yourself engaged in such a tirade or been the recipient of it and what the upshot of that experience was. That's coming up later this hour on Air Talk. We'll be back in just 1 minute.